much. It's great to be here. Timekeeping is determined by this ball above my head, which, if I stay here too long, will burn the remainder of the hair. That's the way it works, isn't it? When I smell, or you smell burning hair. Okay, let's start with a couple of poems from the book. This one is called Inyami Yami. Dedicate this to Africa, she'll know why. In Yami Yami. It is surprising that I keep on my office windowsill a representation of a god. In the late 50s, they dammed the Zambezi, flooded the valley, and created Lake Kariba. In Yami Yami, a water god of the Batanka tribe lives there. Half serpent, half fish, carved from wood, he sits close, as if to protect and perhaps to prompt me to believe, beyond reason, that somewhere above or below water, a benevolent being is shielding me from harm. The second poem is inspired by a story of a lady from the Inuit tribe in the northern territories of Canada, which were once ruled by Britain, and she admitted to murder and abandonment of her children, but the court, an English court, found her not guilty because, as the judge said, we should not judge people who find themselves in particular circumstances. This poem is called Kikik, her name, Kikik. The caribou did not appear that terrible spring, leaving the death-white winter to starve the tribe, the old, crippled, and sick giving up their used lives, the ties of the living splintering like ice, the power of hunger. They fought over scarcity, as when her half-brother, pushed by the rage of starvation, shot her husband. She buried his freezing body, bade her child fetch the sharpest knife, stalked him under dark, and sliced wide open his hollow stomach, the power of love. Against the swirling blades of snow and sleet, her five children wasting, they trekked across the endless, empty white until dragged under the drifts. She wrapped the youngest two in sealskins, the power of instinct. They found them before the wolves, coffined in their skin. This poem is about relationships, and applies to my relationship, I suppose. In this case, it applies to one of my sons. It's called Connection. In the constant chase of your own ferromagnetic tail, your geomag spinning top gives the hump to the brake factor of friction, the apathy of waning momentum, creates the illusion of persistent revolution in space, not unlike the planets in ponderous orbit on the axis of their own insouciance in the vast and limitless explosion of universe, the prevailing domain of our poor existence, where despite the laws of attraction, our earthly trysts are marked as equal and opposite forces, unable to locate polar opposites, repelled, each of us wishing for the stuck togetherness of magnetic attraction where we share the ions of human connection. Thank you. Some couple of years ago, I was privileged to be at a reading with Seamus Heaney and Michael Longley. It was outdoor, funnily enough, at the end of August, but it was freezing. And I observed a very strange, lovely picture of Seamus and Michael, Seamus Heaney and Michael Longley, huddled together in the front row, sharing a scarf. It's actually the last Sunday in August, so it must be around now. The scarf. If it wasn't for my good sense, I might have thought the ancient ordery conspired at your toil to read your verses on heritage and history on that late summer day at Tara. A wind sharp as the two of the dawn cutting through the graveyard. I spied you two sitting on the stone wall, sharing an X-scarf, shielded against the pagan winds, protecting your own words. In the good old days of the 19th century, in the so-called lunatic asylums, some physicians used to photograph their patients because they believed that the face gave some clue as to what was going on in the mind. Maybe some truth in that, I don't know. It's a famous photograph in the Metropolitan Museum in the United States. It's called Seated Woman with Bird. This poem, Seated Woman with Bird. The abdomen full body photograph. The objective representation of reality hangs in the Metropolitan. Shows her in a full-length hospital-issue checkered dress. She gives full eye contact as the camera traps the permanent cloud of her soul, traces the connection between the visible and the invisible. She cradles a dead pigeon, its limp, broken neck hanging as the photographer listens with the picture before him to the silent but telling language of nature. There are no clues to her history or disposition. Her cold eye stare tells us the story of her life, a perfect and faithful record of what she never knew. Thank you. This is a poem inspired by an overnight in the B&B where my breakfast was shared with someone I'd never met before. No more detail than that. I share a breakfast table with a stranger. Although the shower holes in my room swayed cold, the atmosphere in the dining hall was warm and faintly old. The motherly waitresses from foreign lands and inner city shuffled chairs to seat the itinerant hungry. We talked of climate change, extinction, and desert winds, of American foreign policy, of Indian homelands. Shared home thoughts and broke rock salt crystals, listened carefully to our dead ancestors' whispers. He spoke of a house of mud and wattle called a hogan. It always had a door facing east to catch the rising sun. I shared a tradition of thatched stone cottages, explained the contents of black pudding and sausages. Turns out he's of Irish and Navajo Indian descent, here to trace his father's early Celtic antecedents. Antecedents was a bad one. His great-grandfather fought for the Confederates, was killed defending dried up river beds. And by the time our coffee and toast was served, we'd abandoned the avoidance of the reserved. We're no longer breakfast table strangers to each other. Instead, we talked like blood brother to blood brother. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Claire Potter, the third author in the book, is not here. So Marriott and I have agreed that we would, in her absence and her honour, read one of her poems. She writes lovely haiku and highborn. And the problem with highborn is a bit like walking through the dark and without any light. There's no punctuation. So it's a little bit of a gamble, so I'm going to have a go at it anyway. Our poem is called For Judas. So this is for Claire McCotter. For Judas. As their sandals mark the hill's warm side, quivering olive leaves, silver the dry ebony air, the only silver here, not already transmuted into hanging branch and field of blood, but now alone, like him, among Judean stone and stars. My flushed mouth is a flower broken centuries before in a prophet's white hand. For how could I not love this man? And there was night in the garden. Tulips, incarnadine his lips. Thank you, that's fierce. Paul still hasn't.
Yeah.
Nose buried in your underbelly. Nose buried in your underbelly, waiting for threat to pass. Your back, sharp and spinous, protects you from us. Sanctuary is a castle of posture, shielding softness and pleasure. This is where we find succor, the resonance of meaning. You have a way of excluding. Beware of the hawk hovering. We all heard of Katie Taylor.
Yeah?
This poem is about Katie. It's called Pentecost. The shim of her wrapped hands poised, she dances her victory shuffle. A single flame ringed with love, God's ambition fulfilled, the world's acclaim blazing on her head. There's quite a few poems about science or based on science. In fact, there's a whole body of poetry now around science and poetry and poems. This is one, it's called Osmosis. The warmth of his breath, his body tightly clamped, as if he wants to seep into you through some osmotic process, as though your skins are permeable to the love that might flow to equal concentration. To watch this blend of heart and body is to attest no laboratory experiment can explain the unexplainable. How the living love the living, how it soaks through us, such small cells in this unimaginable universe. Anyone science know what it's all about? This poem called Wreckage. So this poem was inspired by in a pub one night watching just chatting and walking to the loo, and saw this lady at the end of the long table on her own, and she was obviously drinking copious amounts of red wine, and she looked wrecked. She was on her own. She was actually very sad looking. And it's called Wreckage. She hung off the end of the table, a lighthouse in a storm that wrecks what comes its way. Lost love is still a burden. Throws debris to deep waters, lets the lightest wood float. The mornings of blank light are the worst, her head like a flock of seagulls. The stain on the wall looms, speaks to her of dark forces that she must face down. She will be the survivor, the one to salvage the wreckage. Terrible atrocity in the States a couple of months ago, where a guy went to the opening night of the Batman movie. I can't remember the title of it.
Dark Knight.
And shot a lot of people. This poem was a reaction, response to that. And the older people in the audience will identify with this poem. And I'll do a hands up afterwards if you identify with this poem. It's called Kapow. The comic strip onomatopoeic balloons burst onto the screen in the black and white 60s made-for-TV series in which Adam West and Burt Ward play the DC Comics superhero and his sidekick in constant combat against a camp of villains in a Gotham forever under threat from pastiche, red telephone, bat pole, bat cave, batmobile, bat capes and bat masks. Conway's house on a Friday evening is a theatre. We gather in to watch the action-packed half-hour of chiropter and costume drama and camp dialogue, where the caped duo climb skyscrapers horizontally, and cliffhangers and fight scenes are played with parody. The defeated scoundrels, Riddling Riddler, Pugnacious Penguin, Jokus Joker, or Clinging Catwoman are defeated, handed over to the leprechaun Captain O'Hara. Each programme is the same, a crime against the city. Inspector Gordon, Reg phones our heroes. After the comic fight, suave Bruce Wayne, with Dick Grayson and Aunt Harriet ensconced in Wayne Manor, sip tea served by Alfred and rehearse the drama of the day. In my memory of those adventures, there is no blood or death, only the message, all criminals will be brought to justice. Tune in tomorrow, same bat time, same bat channel. Hands up. This is I suppose an extended metaphor, how to mend a broken vase. Near invisible shards lurk in dark corners or closeting crevices with oven-glazed fragments that would defy smooth assembly. A gift from the honeymoon of singing waiters and bright yellow moons, where discord was an out-of-town stranger, its broken bones now lie on the floor, its long shelf life ended. She gathers up with porcelain hands, nose repair can only happen with a bond that holds. Finish up with two more from the book. One's about a serious poem. Sorry about that. Late on Monday night. It's called Respect. Father Byrne, Father Brown, walked the walled gardens. Soutans gathered off the wet ground. Greasy hands on black cloth. Missiles clasped close to chest. Sorrowful mystery, sacred hearts blessed. Here is the soft focus across the yard. He sees every face in the dark of his mind. Number one, number two, stand up, wipe that grin, boy, you whinging pup, stop that crying, boy. Remember to show him respect. Genuflect. Kiss his ring. He will touch your cheek. Expect him to touch your cheek. In the cool of the afternoon, empty, exhausted classrooms, chalk dust on desks, ink stains on shirts and dresses, a time for play, study time, catch-up time. Stand up, sit down, give me your hand. There now, gentle. Don't cry, remember, quiet. Don't cry, don't. He sees all things. He is everywhere, on the street, in your house, in your room, in your heart, fingers to your lips, kiss. After Mass, take off the chasuble, cincture, amice, alb. Come here, hold this and this. What's your name? Ah, yes, I knew your older brother, a fine boy. Are you another? In the unlit chancel, head lowered, at a side altar, uncontrollable, all silent, words not allowed, words not able to describe the sorrowful tears, the agony in the garden, the spit in the face, the slap on the cheek, the pull of the hair, the scourge of the skin, the crown of the thorns, the pierce of the spear, the stigmata forever and ever. Father Brown, Father Byrne in the parlour, breakfast after Mass, chatter of the day, sports, baptism, confessions, altar boys, tea. Remember to genuflect, kiss his ring, show him respect. Here is the hard focus, here is the view, all twisted and turned, inside out, outside in. Here is the boy, here is the man. Remember, show him respect. Thank you. finally, the poem, the title poem, Measuring, short poem. And this poem is a memory poem, and all good carpenters will know that you measure and you measure again before you make a cut. Good rule of life, I think, as well as a rule of carpentry. This is self-explanatory. Measuring. In the shade of a November evening, we could be found in the 12x8 breeze-blocked backyard shed lit by a bare 40-watt tungsten. Inches deep in the slush of sawdust and shavings, measuring and marking and measuring again the lengths of 4x2 or 3x6 before gently pressing them against the softly humming saw, each piece shaping to its future. Few words were spoken, but in the hush you could cut the air of satisfaction with a blade when the two ends joined flush. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.